everybody. So you look around, there so many of us are on vacation, first week of school, all that stuff. We have no idea what everybody's going through right now. So we lift you all up in prayer. I hope you're here. Nice to see you all. Let's pray. Dear God, meet us where we are. Hold us, wrap us up. Amen. Please turn to Matthew 7. No, Matthew 11. How about? This is just, I want you to see it, and I want us to read it together in full voice. Actually, I guess we can't because our translations are always different. So, Matthew 11. The very end. I need my glasses. This is a large print Bible, and I still need reading glasses. I'm falling apart. Okay, 28, Matthew 11, 28. Then Jesus said, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light." That's not part of the message. I just had an idea that we maybe needed to hear that today. So, let's move on. It's a different kind of message today. I have a whiteboard today. Can anybody remember the last time I ever used a whiteboard? Yep, I'm not that guy. Today might be seven steps to whatever. It's not. I'm just kidding. But okay, so we stay stuck in situations sometimes. We get stuck in all of these things, relationships, jobs, behaviors that aren't awesome, right? We're in those things and they're not awesome. They might be unfulfilling. They might be destructive. They might be painful. Or they might just be routine. Or they might just be good when we're made for great, okay? All of those things. So we get in these situations, and have you ever wondered why? Have you ever seen it? Because it's really, really easy to see in others, right? It's so much harder to see in ourselves. You can look at someone and say, gosh, they're in that thing, but it's much harder to see in ourselves. So we kind of wonder why all of that things, and it could be, and it is most of the time, things like fear, unworthiness, distraction, lack of imagination. You know, it keeps us from moving or growing. Stepping into the movement of the Bible, we know the Bible is just, it's a book of movement. It's a book of open. It's opening page after page. It just continues to open, and the story keeps moving forward. And we don't step into that. We get into this rut or routine where we're just going through the motion, step after step, going through. You get up, you brush your teeth, you go to work. You come home, you eat dinner, you brush your teeth, you go to bed. You get up, you brush your teeth. You know, you just go through those things. And we lose any of that imagination that things could be different. Right? And oftentimes the truth is there's two kinds of pains. One is the pain of staying the same, and one is the pain of change. They both involve pain. And oftentimes the pain of staying the same is lower than the pain or the fear of change. But sometimes the pain of staying the same outweighs the pain and fear of change, and we begin some kind of journey. Right? Now, when I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking some of us are probably right in the middle of that. I'm looking right at Emily, and I'm thinking about how she's starting this new journey of her life. You know, we start these things, and maybe we're right, we're beginning, we're just starting the journey. And sometimes we're right in the middle of the journey where it's, or we've just started, and it's kind of painful because it's always painful, anytime we change, it's about uncomfortability. So we might be there. Or we might have just finished one. Or we might have just abandoned one. Or we might have that thing in the back of our head that are telling us we need to start one. This needs to change. Something needs to happen here. And so as I'm going about this, I'm finding that this journey is usually just the same. It's usually the same for all of us, which isn't surprising at all to me because we are all human beings having this human experience. You know, it's not really that. The details are different, right? But the characteristics and the skeleton of everything is pretty much the same. And this journey really only has two paths. That was surprising to me the more I sat with this. So the journey's about the same, and it has two paths. So while that's surprising to me, I don't exactly know why, because the things we learn in the scriptures are true. And sometimes when we find them other places, we're surprised. You know what I mean? We go, wow, that's really something. Why we continue to be surprised, I can't answer. But significant journeys begin in the same way. Here's my whiteboard. Okay, the first step is sa'ak, S-A-apostrophe-A-Q, which is a Hebrew word that means cry out. All journeys start with some kind of discomfort, okay? Discomfort. There's a need for change. Who knows what that is? It's different. It can start. It can be, you know, out of a positive experience, like I'm ready to start something new, or it could be a negative. I need to get away from this and start something new. In the Bible calls it sa'ak, and most of these stories begin with sa'ak, and I'm going to read a little bit from a book. It's a book by Rob Bell, so get this. I've seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. That's a verse in the Exodus. A God who sees and hears, a God who hears the cry. The Hebrew word here for cry is sa'ak, and we find it all throughout the Bible. Sa'ak is the expression of pain, the ouch, the sound we utter when we're wounded. But sa'ak is also a question that arises out of the pain of the wound. Where's justice? Did anybody see that? Who will come to my rescue? Did anybody hear that, or am I alone here? Sa'ak is what Abel's blood does from the ground after he's killed by his brother. The Israelites are oppressed. They're in misery. They're suffering. And when they cry out, God hears. This is a God who always hears the cry. This is central to who God is. God always hears the cry of the oppressed. The cry inaugurates history. It kicks things in gear, it shakes things up and gets them moving. The cry is the catalyst, the cause, the reason that a new story unfolds. But God in this story doesn't just hear the cry. God does something about it. The Exodus is how God responds to the cry. Think about your life. What are the moments that have shaped you the most? If you were to pick just a couple, what would they be? Periods of transformation, times when your eyes were opened, decisions you made that affected the rest of your life. How many of them came when you reached the end of your rope? When everything fell apart? When you were confronted with your powerlessness? When you were ready to admit your life was unmanageable? When there was nothing left to do but cry out? If we're comfortable, we don't often start things, right? Is that your experience? When we're where we are and things are just okay, we don't usually start. For many people, it was their cry, their desperation, their acknowledgement of their oppression. That was the beginning of their liberation. When we're on top, when the system works for us, when we're capable of managing our lives, what else is there for God to do? But the cry inaugurates redemptive history. These slaves in Egypt cry out, God hears, and something new happens. Things aren't how they were, things change. These slaves are rescued from the oppression of Egypt. Now there's an end note on the sock. I think the word's super cool, obviously, so that's why we're reading all this stuff. The Torah commentary, the JPS Torah commentary, calls Sock one of the most powerful words in the Hebrew language, pervaded by moral outrage and soul-stirring passion. Soul-stirring passion. Isn't that cool? It denotes the anguished cry of the oppressed, the agonized pleas of the helpless victim. Walter Brueggemann calls the Exodus cry the primal scream that permits the beginning of history. He goes on to define Sock, on one hand, it's a cry of misery and wretchedness with some self-pity, while it also functions for the official filing of a legal complaint. The mournful one's the plaintiff. Israel does not voice resignation, but instead expresses a militant sense of being wronged with the powerful expectation that it will be heard and answered. I love that. The powerful expectation that it's heard and answered. So, all of this, when we get to the end of our rope, when we're about to start something, we cry out, we say, we have to change, we get to change. Something happens, there's a discomfort. Our clothes don't fit anymore. And I don't just mean, you know, you're gaining weight and you're out of your clothes. I mean, it's just uncomfortable where you are right now. And you feel like you're penned in and you need to start. That's number one. That's the first step in everything. Number two, the second step is rescue. Okay? There is deliverance. There is rescue. God always answers the call of the oppressed, right? The cry of the oppressed. Always, always, always. The other part of this in a practical manner is we start, we change. We change the way that we eat. We start a new job. We leave. We do something. Okay? And this also brings with it discomfort, right? You can make all the good changes and it's uncomfortable, right? Is that everyone's experience? Thank you. Okay. There's also discomfort in this. The discomfort isn't the clue that you're making a bad mistake, even though we take it that way. We kind of think sometimes it's supposed to be easy to make these positive changes. It's not. Eating salads isn't easy. They're gross. All the time. Okay. Number three. So we start to change. We've been delivered. God came. God sent Moses. God sent the deliverance. They leave Egypt. Okay? Number three, I'm calling progress. Okay? And in that case, there's gratitude. There's gratitude. We leave Egypt. We start the new thing. You eat the salads and you lose a little bit of weight. You feel great. You start working out. You start to see the weight start to go up. Randy runs. He runs and he sees himself getting faster and faster and faster. Right? Can run farther and farther and farther. There's gratitude here. Look at what's happened. We're out of Egypt. We're not brick-making machines anymore. Everything is new. It's a new beginning. There's freedom in this. And every time you hear the word freedom, anytime we hear the word freedom, it begs the question, for what? For what? Right? Now what? Now what do we do with this? What do we do with this freedom? And you see this over and over and over. Israelites are slaves in Egypt. They cry out. Moses comes. He's their deliverer. Through Moses comes God's deliverance. There is celebration, there is commitment, and they say, you are our God, we'll follow you. Right? It's this huge moment. The whole Old Testament is about this. Israel falls apart. Then they cry out. They start worshiping other gods. They start leaving. They start walking away, and it's uncomfortable, discomfort. They cry out, God rescues them over and over and over. There's celebration. There's dedication. We will follow your commands. We will recommit to you. You start to gain a little bit of weight. Your doctor says, hey, man, like the doctor told me, you got to lose a little weight, man. It's a tough conversation to have. But then you change. There might be a health crisis, whatever. Then you start to change. You lose the pounds. You get a little healthier. You stop taking all the medications that you used to have to take. And then there's celebration, and you say, I will do this forever. This is the way to live. This is so great. I'm so thankful. I feel like you have a new life. You're overwhelmed with life, so you make a little bit of a change. You start to read your Bible. You start to have practices about peace and focus, contemplation practices in your life, and the volume and the speed on the world gets turned down a little bit inside of you. And then you have that moment where you say, I'm always going to do this. This is amazing. I love this life that I'm living. I get to do this. And it goes on and on and on. Everybody's familiar with this. Now, there's a fork in the road. There's a fork in the road, and it's at this point. Matthew 7, the fork is one of a choice, and the fork is one of two gates. Matthew 7, 13 and 14, enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow is the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Fork in the road. So the first path we're going to call A. Okay? And what that is, number four, is we forget. We forget. We forget. We start to take for granted how different things are, how it is. We begin to lose the gratitude. And you know what happens? And this is going to ring to you. You're totally going to get it. We start to focus on the new uncomfortability and we romanticize the old one. You know what I mean when I say, it wasn't that bad before. It wasn't so bad. You know, it's hard here. I'm climbing this hill. It's hard. The third mile, the sixth mile, the tenth mile, it's hard. And you go, it wasn't so bad before. My knees didn't hurt all the time before. My back didn't hurt all the time before. It wasn't so bad. It was manageable. This pain's tough. Right? Egypt isn't so bad. The food was great in Egypt. At least that's where we knew we were getting a meal, not this manna that I got to eat every day for 40 years. Right? It's not so bad. It wasn't so bad then. I wasn't that broken. That what I was carrying wasn't that heavy. You know that? You remember? You know that feeling, right? It wasn't so bad. Okay? Then from there, our favorite word, Dennis, gongusmos. We start to gongusmos. We complain. We grumble. Gratitude now, we are not beginning to lose gratitude. It's gone. And you know there's a word for a loss, a complete loss of gratitude. And the word is entitlement. That's where we deserve more. I deserve more. I deserve more than manna or quail or water from some rock or walking in the wilderness. I deserve more. I deserve better. We start to say things like, why is this happening to me? Why me? Why is it happening to us? I should be able to whatever. Anybody, is this ringing? Yeah, anybody familiar with this kind of thing? Then, number six, we slide. We slide. It's at that point we turn back. It's at that point we lose ground. Here's a great example of this, and it's from the Exodus. Well, it's from the Old Testament. God rescues the Israelites from Egypt. Egypt is an empire. Egypt is built on the backs of slaves, and Egypt is built as an empire, as a military superpower. Okay? And God reminds them, you will rest. You are not slaves anymore. You're a peaceful community. You will bless the world through you. Solomon builds the temple with slaves. That's a shocker. That's amazing. He builds the temple of God with slaves and builds his military might. All of a sudden, he's exchanging with other countries for chariots, for horses, which are symbols of war. See? He's forgotten. He's forgotten. He's turned back. He's lost the point of everything. It got to be too much. And now he turned back. Now it became about Solomon and how great he was and about keeping people in line. Right? Do we know that place? You lose a little bit of weight, but you're tired. You'd like really like a candy bar. You'd really like some ice cream. So you eat that and you go, well, that's not so bad. All of a sudden, I'm going back. I'll miss days at the gym. Now I'm not eating salads anymore at all. I'm eating hamburgers. And I'm eating ice cream. And I'm eating candy bars. I now have slaves instead of we are slaves, I have slaves. See what I mean? And then we turn back. And then what's the consequence of this turning back? Pain, 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 pain. Number 7 is pain. And then what happens with the pain, with the discomfort? We cry out and we're back to the beginning and we're living it again. It gets so bad, we live it again. Is this familiar to anybody? Okay, this is going to hit a little close to home. You have a relationship, and it's not good, okay? It's not good. I was part of a relationship. Thank goodness Angel's not here. I'll tell this story. She doesn't watch the videos anyway, and she doesn't care what I say anyway. I was in a relationship in college, okay? It wasn't a great one, okay? So there would be this moment where we both realized it's not great. So we would break up, and then we would feel great. This is awesome. Now I don't have to fight anymore. Everything's great. Maybe I can see other people in a little bit, but first I'm going to go see my friends. I'm going to get to do what I want to do. We were enjoying ourselves apart. And then the moment comes where you go, I don't have anything to do Friday night. Maybe it wasn't so bad before. Is this ringing? And then you go, it's not so bad. And then all of a sudden, you're making a call. Well, maybe you want to go out with me. She says, okay. And then you get back, and you're right back in the same thing. Until then it takes a couple of months until you realize it was poopy before, and now it's still poopy. Nobody's surprised. So it gets uncomfortable, and then we go back to the beginning, and then we cry out, and we do this again and again and again. That's why it's so familiar. It's the usual loop that we go through. It plays out over and over and over again. Slaves of Egypt, Israel, over and over. Look at the Old Testament. Read the book of the Old Testament. You'll drive yourself crazy going, why do they keep doing this? And then if you take a step back, you will see you're doing this too. It's a human experience. We keep doing this. I keep doing this. We keep living it out. Yo-yo weight gain. Has anybody ever heard of that? This is why. This is why this is. If you come to my gym on January 1st, well, maybe not January 1st. If January 1st is a Saturday or Sunday, it's not. The Monday after January 1st, it's full. It's full. That's why. Start something new. It's awesome. I feel great. February 1st, they're gone. Because of the A pattern. The A loop. It's what you would call like old tricks. You know what I mean? These are the old tricks that we know and we're really comfortable with. It's a historic pattern. Why else would everyone keep trying to think that this myth of redemptive violence is ever going to work? When has violence ever stopped violence? It doesn't. It doesn't. Yet we keep saying, if we just win this one, there'll never be war again. It never happens. It never happens. It just keeps rolling. Right? It's damaging. It's limiting. There's a lack of imagination. And this is where it is what it is, where I am what I am, and where this is the way we've always done it. This is just the way it is. That's where it comes from. Right? Because it's about right here where you start to say, well, I'm not good enough for a new way anyway. You start to say, I don't really deserve this new way. I don't really, you know, I am that way. Well, who was I to think I could change? Right? I don't know if you have those automatic negative thoughts in your head running through your head all the time. But the second that you start to feel something different, you start to hear them. You're gonna mess it up. And then you do because it's uncomfortable and you go, yep, it's all gone. I'm that guy. I'm still that guy. Right? It's the language of despair. It's the language of ego. It's the language of self. And it leads to destruction. It's the path that leads to destruction. That's the first gate. Now, there's a second path. And we'll call that the B path. Okay? First three are the same. We start to progress. We start to move. We start to get. Then, it's going to be a totally different word here. Number four in the B path, instead of forget, we remember. There's practices of gratitude in our lives. We remember one and two. We remember the rescue. We remember how it was before, why we cried out in the first place, and we remember the rescue. Cool, right? You can see it's already a different path. Then, five, with these practices, we start to see fruit of the things that have been planted. We start to see some things change. We start to see big results. We start to see growth. We start to live into this new creation that we are. We start to live into enlightenment. We start to see. We see ourselves. We see the world differently. Okay, you with me? Then, once we do that, we take it out. We take it out. We use it. We witness. We build into others. That's where mentorship comes from. Right? Abraham is called to be a blessing to all nations, and so are we. We are called to be a blessing to everyone. It was never meant for us to crawl into a cave and think of how saved we are. Was never supposed to be that way. What if Iron Man built the suit just to fly around and do nothing? What does that help anybody? It's just cool then. Fine. We were never called. Dead Sea. Does everybody know the Dead Sea metaphor? Bodies of water are awesome because water flows into it and water flows out of it. Just keeps moving. The Dead Sea, that, first of all, the first one, it's where life lives, grows, it's beautiful, it's rich, it's dense. The Dead Sea, water flows into it, and it never goes out. Nothing lives there. It's called the Dead Sea for a reason. Nothing lives there. Because it never goes out. We're the same. we're exactly the same. If we just take, some of us have tons and tons of money coming out of our ears. If you don't use that with generosity, if we don't give, if we don't build into someone else, we just start building bigger barns to keep our stuff. The Bible doesn't have good stories about people that are building bigger and bigger barns. We keep it moving. We are blessed so that we can bless. Right? That's the cool thing. That's the cool thing about all this. It's getting chilly in here. If you want to turn off the air conditioner, that's fine with me. Okay? You too. I don't think that you're getting chilly, brother. I'm just... So, that's the thing. To be a blessing to all nations. This is much less familiar. This you don't see very often. This is lasting change. This is a healthy path of becoming. And the Bible has a word for this. This is called sanctification. Where we change, where we become set apart, where we become the conduit for God to use and bless everyone. Right? And this leads to life. Right? Two paths, two gates. One leads to destruction, one leads to life. Notice this. The first path is the story of I. It's the story of me. It's of what you can do for me. It's my story. It's what I deserve. It's what I like. It's what I want. It's selfish. It's selfish. This is about where it changes from one of gratitude to one of what I deserve. To one of, it's a story of entitlement. I can just take what I want because it's me. I deserve it. I want it. Well, I want it, so I'll take it, and I'll do what I have to do to keep it. Okay? The second one is one of he. That is the story where it is much, much, much bigger than me. That's the story of God. That's the story of others. That's the story of what he did. That's the story of what he does. In number two, that's the story of what they want and need. That's a selfless story. Right? It's cool, right? It's pretty neat. Two paths are about one choice. Okay, will I forget or will I remember? That's the choice. That's the only choice here. Will I continue on this path? What's the why here? Whose story is this after all? Is this an I story or a he story? That's what we need to answer. Will we forget? Or will we remember? Will we be like Solomon building a new empire on the backs of slaves? Or are we building an empire like Jesus where it's setting everybody free and setting us all free from that garbage that we've been living over and over and over into a brand new way of living, a brand new life, a brand new world? Okay, when you read the Bible, this is what I do. And has anybody ever had the experience where you're reading the Bible and you're hearing a thing and you come in here and I'm talking about it? And then you turn on the radio, and it doesn't even have to be Christian radio. It can be pop radio. And then you hear a song that makes you think about the words that you had just heard and hear. And then you go to the store and you overhear a conversation where people are doing the same thing. And then the novel that you're reading, that's also dealing with the same kind of themes. There's a reason for that. But what happens is we start to read the Bible and we start to look for links, ties, themes, narratives. We're not just taking this picture where I'm reading one verse and using that verse out of context to beat up people with. Okay? I am looking at all of this stuff, and the thing is, that's what happens. when we start to see these links, these themes, these narratives, we find them there then, and we also find them here now. Right? And the reason is because they're true. Because they're true. That's why. Has anybody ever heard me use the word quadratos? Okay, well, I would be happy to talk to you about it. So if you haven't heard it, give me a call. Or stay after. I'd love to talk about it. Okay? But there's also the quadratos is a four-part journey. Matthew, Mark, John, and Luke. The ancient reading cycle was not like in your Bibles, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It was Matthew, Mark, John, and Luke, and we'll get to that in a second. It's also Joseph Campbell has a theory that's called the hero's journey. It's the same thing. And it's the same as this, and it's the same as in your life, and it's the same as in the Bible, and it's the same in Star Wars, it's the same in Lord of the Rings, it's the same in anything. Okay? A, Matthew. Matthew 1 and 2 are the story of Matthew. We start a journey. The whole book of Matthew is written for Jewish people on a new path. They are now following Jesus, which is a whole new thing. They know one way. It hurts. They cry out. They start. They begin. They are rescued by Jesus, so they begin. We start a journey. Luke Skywalker gets on the Millennium Falcon. Okay? Frodo leaves the Shire. Okay? 2, Mark is when things get rough. Right here. Because it's never easy. It's never easy. There's obstacles. I could get so deep into all of the extra, like I could start talking about the Nazgul and all of the things from Lord of the Rings, or the Sith and all of that, the Empire. I could talk about all that forever. But you already know what this is. When you start to exercise, let's say it works out for you to start in the mornings. All of a sudden, you can't sleep. All of a sudden, something happens the night before, right? It gets really, really tough. It gets really tough right away. There's obstacles. That's why the book of Mark is entirely about storms. The great stories about storms that you've heard, where Jesus is on, where he calms the sea, all of those, it's set, so much of Mark is set on the water. Because there's so much unknown about the water, especially in the ancient time. Right? So, that's that. Then, 3, 4, and 5 are John. That's enlightenment. That's where you see. That's where you learn. That's where something happens. You learn something. Which is why the book of John is all about, it's very, very spiritual, and it's about people seeing things that they had never seen before, learning things they had never learned before, becoming something different. Luke becomes a Jedi. This moment happens between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi when he learns what it is to be a Jedi Knight. Okay? He sees something different. Everything's different now. Okay? The whole world's changed. Now, the last one is Luke. Luke happens on the road, mostly on the road, and mostly what it is, it's about service. It's about how we take it out. Luke comes back to liberate the galaxy. Frodo gets rid of the ring, gets to Mordor, gets rid of the ring to save all the realms. Right? This is it. It's the same loops. It's the same choices. There's just different words. There's different examples. There's different names. Okay? But you see this happening over and over and over because it's true. It's true. The Bible and the Sermon on the Mount in particular is the blueprint of a brand new existence, a new creation, a new world that's told in parable. It's told in hyperbole. It's told in poem and song. It's told in story, right? And the Sermon on the Mount is using flowers, trees, planks and splinters, pearls and pigs, and now gates and paths. They're all getting to the same thing. It's an invitation out of this familiar, destructive loop, away from the wide path, and it's a map to the narrow gate, right? See, we're always moving. We're invited to growth. This is the story of Scripture. And no matter which path we take, it's hard. There's trouble. Things happen. Things get in the way, right? Discomfort happens. But the thing is, when we notice the fruit of transformation, we become awake to our own deliverance, then we remember what has been done. And what's another way to say what has been done for us? Grace. Remember grace. And then we respond. Then we live. Then we love. Then we do the thing. Then we take the skinny path. Right? Then we have freedom. Then we enjoy freedom. Then we have life. You see how all these metaphors are coming together on these two paths. All these metaphors that Jesus has used over and over and over come together on these two paths, right? And you see why the one choice is so important. The one choice is so important. If we remember what has been done for us, if we remember our rescue, how can we not pass this grace, this forgiveness, this freedom, this kindness? How can we not pass that on to others? How can we not do unto others? See how it's all coming together? Sometimes all of these things, all of the clouds that we've learned, get tied together and everything makes sense. Right? All of the things that we've learned in the Sermon on the Mount, and I would argue the Bible, get tied together. How can we remember what has been done? How can we remember that we have been set free from Egypt and not do unto others? Right? How can we not? And when we do, that's the thing. That's the thing. It starts to spread like a wildfire. And I have a picture that I like to think about, and it's my pyramid scheme of love. Okay? But I'm going to start to call it a pandemic of love, because we need to redefine pandemic, because whenever we mention pandemic, we start to think about 2020. So if there's a pandemic of love, it works exactly the same, okay? I get sick with love, and I love Cass, okay? And then Cass loves Emily and Allie. And then Emily loves Ryan and Mark. And Allie loves Patricia and Dennis. You see how it's going? It's going to work exactly like COVID. Exactly. But instead of masks, we're going to be trying to get it, because I'm going to see how happy Cass is being loved by me and loving other people. And then everything's different. The pandemic spreads. The pyramid gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then the world changes. I haven't given up. I was just talking to G this morning saying, man, some people are not part of the pyramid scheme and don't want to be in the pandemic, okay? The vast, vast, vast majority, I'm not giving up. I haven't lost hope. The vast, vast majority would love that. They would love to love and be loved. We all would love to be loved and love others. We would love to be that body of water that's teeming with life. We would love to get up, and instead of the routine of, well, I'm going to work, we would go, look what I get to do. I get to do these things. I get to start fresh. I get to learn. I get to learn, and I get to bless everybody through this wonderful, amazing rescue. Salvation is another word for that. done. Or I'll go forever. This is the kind of thing that I go forever with. So whenever you're ready. Amen.